Today on Movie Roll, as we talk about Poltergeist and Pitch Perfect 2. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings, all.
Hello.
Rashmi is FaceTiming us today from Chicago still.
Still in Chicago. Did you like how I mimed as Joe was doing the intro, Yassi?
You did. You were very good.
It was like you were really here. Mocking me, as always.
Mocking you across a different time zone.
Mocking?
I get no respect.
You were mocked in every time zone,
Julie. I was imitating, and imitating is the highest form of admiration.
No, of mockery. So what time is it there? It's getting pretty late for you.
It is 10 past 11. I am a dedicated movie waller.
And you've been on the go pretty much constantly at your conference, haven't you?
I am, yes.
Well, we thank you for your diligence.
Yes.
And your commitment.
And I thank you for your loveliness.
You can tell she's tired.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe we should jump in.
The razor wit is a little blunted today.
Hey, I think it's plenty witty when somebody talks about my loveliness. Not a problem.
Compliment you on your nice hair, Yassi.
You did compliment me on my hair, yes. Thank you.
Okay, well, we have two movies to review. Let's start with Pitch Perfect 2.
So, okay, I have the intro for that. So after a humiliating command performance at the Lincoln Center, the Barden Bellas enter an international competition that no American group has ever won in order to regain their status and their right to perform. So this is directed by Elizabeth Banks, and it's written by Kay Cannon and Mickey Rapkin, and that says characters, so I believe Mickey Rapkin pretty much helped develop the characters, but Kay Cannon wrote the movie itself. And basically, it has most of the people who are in Pitch Perfect 1, including Anna Kendrick, Rebel Wilson, Brittany Snow, Skylar Astin, Adam Devine, Anna Camp, a whole lot of other people. And we have the addition of Hailee Steinfeld in this one, who plays a new character called Emily. So let's go with Yassi. What did you think of this one?
So I should start by saying that my reaction to the original Pitch Perfect was, I think, the quintessential reaction for most people, which is that this was a small movie with no big actors. I think Anna Kendrick was the only big actor in it. It was, you know, the studio didn't do a great job releasing it. They thought it would probably play in cinemas for 3 weeks. And the movie really got around by word of mouth. And I think it kind of grew to this cult status over a period of time. And I think its soundtrack was, you know, in the top 10 as recently as a few months ago. So it kind of became this phenomenon. And everybody kind of grew to love this movie that nobody expected to do well. And I was that person. I mean, I saw this movie and I was completely thrilled, and I was laughing even when I shouldn't be. I was laughing and being, you know, with the movie. So I came to this, I had such a great experience, like most people with the original Pitch Perfect 1, that I came to this movie, the second part, to be just as thrilled and excited and have fun. So my reaction to Pitch Perfect 2, unfortunately, is not the quintessential reaction that everybody else had. And I think I have only myself to blame, because I had such high expectations. I got into such a nice, happy, magical almost place with the first movie that it was impossible for a second one to replicate it. So it came off as a bit of a disappointment, but it's 2 hours of fun. I cannot deny that.
Okay, Joe.
Yeah, I forget who it was that said this, but the problem with sequels is that they have to be 10 times as good to be received half as well. And, you know, that's clearly the case here. I mean, I think this movie, pun absolutely intended, hits a lot of the same notes that the original one did, and I think it comes a little too close to it. I mean, yeah, yes, the Pitch Perfect, for me, the original, was a fun movie at the time that I only really began to appreciate, kind of like Bridesmaids, yeah, on my second or third or fourth rewatching. And it's so damn rewatchable. Yeah. I mean, every time it pops on TV, we stick it on for 5 minutes and that's it. There goes your afternoon because you just pulled in. It's beautifully done. This just trod so much of the same ground that for me felt a little tired and not just not as fresh as the original. And, you know, just before I let you respond, yeah, Rashmi, I was a little disappointed that it also carried over one or two of the original's flaws, which for me were the kind of the Rebel Wilson fat jokes and the snarkiness of the Elizabeth Banks and I forget the name of the guy there, the two commentators.
Rashmi?
Okay, so I was going to say, you know, first of all, congratulations to Elizabeth Banks for beating out Mad Max Fury Road as the number one movie of the week. And this isn't her directorial debut, but it's certainly her directorial debut of a large movie. She's done some shorts before. So yay to Girl Power. And now that I've burnt my bra, onto the review. So, I mean, you know, did we need a sequel? No. Did it have a good story? Not really. Is it hammy? Yes. But did I have a darn good time at the movies? Yes, I did. And I think that's why it's okay for sequels like this to be made. I mean, I bopped my head, I laughed, I cringed, and I actually enjoyed the celluloid experience. I know what you guys are saying about it not being as good as the first. I think it's almost like The Hangover 2, which is, you know, No, it's not as bad. I agree it's not as bad, but it's almost the same story, right? It's not dissimilar. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the movie.
In fact, that's what I just wrote down a few minutes ago, that thank God this movie is not Hangover 2 bad. I thought Hangover 2 was almost unwatchable because it was a complete retread of the original, just in a different geographical location. This one actually, you know, moment by moment, all the jokes work. But I just wanted it to have more meat to it. Like the Hailee Steinfeld character doesn't really go anywhere. There's this whole subplot with Anna Kendrick working as an intern at a music studio, which really kind of fizzles out. And I mean, it's written by Kay Cannon, who co-wrote most of the episodes of 30 Rock, which I absolutely venerate. So I'm almost wondering, was it too subtle? Are there like things being said about the place of women and, you know, you should accept what you're good at and excel at that and not try to be good at everything. Maybe there were some points being made, but they completely flew under the radar for me. So the plot almost became irrelevant in this movie. And that's
unfortunate. I mean, its strongest point is that it was just nice to hang out with these girls again. You know, they're a fun crowd. You know, the male characters didn't have much to do in terms of, you know, the boy group here. But you know, they're nice. They're entertaining. They're funny to be with. You know, they're quirky and you know they really did give us what we were all asking for, which was just a bit more time with them in the studio. And you know, I couldn't even tell you right now what the plot of this second movie was about, because it seemed to retread so much of the original's ground. But I didn't find the movie offensive in any way. I mean, it was absolutely enjoyable. And I think the main problem that this movie has is that Pitch Perfect exists, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, so... Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, for me, look, the story is so forced, but the arrangements are good, and I really like that German team, you know, that sound. Yeah. And the bad guys, the good bad guys in the movie. I mean, there's something out of an 80s pop video, and they're so cliche, but that's why cliches are funny. And I literally, look, for me, there were so many layers of joke that I felt like I was one of the only people laughing in the whole movie theater. And I'm just worried that people aren't going to get all the layers. There are many layers of joke to this movie. But I feel they're wasted. But boy, did I laugh. I mean, I literally was bent over double at some point.
No, I mean, to the movie's great credit, it has a joke about Sotomayor at one point.
Yes, and then, exactly.
And then there's this absurd scene in the middle, which is actually my favorite scene in the movie, with the David Cross character. He's this millionaire who is in a pajamas and he invites all the groups. Oh, yeah. You know, and that movie just, that scene kind of exists at some other strange Twilight Zone level, but it's so funny. I mean, you know, all the categories which come up that they have to, you know, like, you know, songs by people who have...
Green Bay Packers. Is it like the Green Bay Packers are there?
Also? Those were the Green Bay Packers, yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
They're actually the Green Bay Packers. Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a testament to how many cameos are in this movie. I think, including the president, for God's sake. I mean, there are so many cameos.
Yeah, I don't think he went to the studio for this cameo.
But still, no, he consented
either,
but
to what I'm saying is, exactly. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, and clearly, you know, this movie's got so much more budget. I mean, that was kind of evidence to me by the much better wardrobes they had and the set. But I agree with what one of you said at the beginning. The funniest lines go to those commentators who reprise their roles from the first movie, and I was literally in stitches. I mean, they were the best lines.
They were
that
mean this
was
time
that
round.
Dancing by, I know, but I love that. They
but
were so
I don't
fun.
Remember them being mean. I remember them being, maybe it's a hindsight thing.
But I like mean humor.
No, I mean, I that actually didn't bother me as much, the two commentators. And I agree that the male character, John, I think his name is John and Gail, they're the other two. But he, you know, he is just all out, you know, sexist guy, right?
Balls to the wall, yeah.
Yeah, but on the one level, it's funny. But at the same time, I think in its own way, of course, it's making a commentary on how, you know, we treat women right now, even now in 2015. So again, you know, that's pretty smart to give credit where it's due. I just wish that, I mean, the movie does such a great job within the confines of its shackles. I just wanted it to break the shackles and be something else. But, you know, to everybody who's loved the original Pitch Perfect, this is more of the same, another delicious heaping of, you know, what you enjoyed the first time. So I have to give it that.
Yeah. All right, let's sum this one up then. So, yes, you go first, because that sounded like a bit of a summary.
I started with 5 out of 10, but even as we were speaking about it, I've recognized that I have more fondness for the movie than I care to admit. And maybe it's just a question of expectations. I just came at it with such huge expectations. So I'm going to bump it up to 6 out of 10. It's a fun movie. It's got its heart in the right place. And, you know, as slightly better than mediocre as it might be, I completely support Hollywood giving chances to female directors. There's so few of them. And this is, Elizabeth Banks has made many shorts. This is her first feature length debut. So there's some good part of Hollywood, which is allowing Elizabeth Banks to direct a very precious commodity, a sequel to a very precious commodity. So,
well,
Joe.
I think that part of Hollywood is Elizabeth Banks, because she was also heavily involved in the production of this movie. But yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a big risk to take, given that I don't know what the circumstances were around not bringing the original director back, because clearly that whoever did that, their name escapes me right now, did a sterling job. So this was, you know, more of the same. And like I said, you know, partway through, if it wasn't for the fact that the original is so well regarded by me and perhaps everyone else, I would have thought more highly of this movie. But as it stands, you know, a great continuation of the plot. Nice to spend time here again. 7 out of 10. And the music was really fun. Yeah.
I was going to say, this isn't Pitch Perfect, but it's good enough and it's very entertaining. Definitely not a waste of money. I think 7 out of 10.
It's interesting. The original director of the movie hasn't made another movie since the original Pitch Perfect. He's directed Anna Kendrick's video of Cups, the song, you know, which got to be so popular. And then he's directed a whole bunch of television, but he hasn't directed anything since the original Pitch Perfect.
Interesting.
And Elizabeth Banks, by the way, was a producer on the original film as well. So she has a lot invested in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And great. She's very good. She's very good in the movie.
Yeah, she's very good.
Okay, moving on to something completely different. Let's talk about...
Yes, his favorite genre.
Yay, horror.
Let's talk about Poltergeist.
So the original Poltergeist came out in 1982. And it was based on a story by Steven Spielberg, who shared screenwriting credits with two others. The movie was a huge commercial success, but more importantly, became a part of the cultural zeitgeist at the time. The film was, of course, based on a family battling several ghosts that are initially drawn to the youngest member of the family, that of Little Caroline. That movie starred Jo Beth Williams and Craig T. Nelson as the parents of this family, which is dealing with the sudden infestation of ghosts. And, you know, even now, Poltergeist is very well known. It became a part of our vocabulary. And now, inexplicably, 33 years later, we have the first remake of that film. It's directed by Gil Keenan, who incidentally was only 6 years old when the original film was released. The same age as the little girl. The movie stars Sam Rockwell and Rosemary DeWitt as the parents. And it follows, I understand, I haven't seen the movie, but it follows a very similar story as the original. So I didn't, obviously, as I said, I didn't see this movie. I wasn't very keen to see it either, but I know the two of you did. So tell me.
All right. So Yassi, can I just ask you a question before I start my review?
Yes.
If you hear from Joe and I that this is a really good movie and you should watch it, will you go watch it?
I won't watch it alone, but I will probably watch it with someone.
Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay, so I hadn't seen the original until about a few weeks ago when Joe forced me to watch it under threat that he'd haunt me if he dies first or something if I didn't. Anyway, I'd always been way too scared of the concept of a poltergeist. And actually, when I watched the original, it was fine. I wasn't scared and it wasn't so scary. But I think had I watched this as a youngster, I would have pooed my pants. Anyways, long ramble, which takes me to the new one, which is crammed full of buy one, get one free, all of the expectable, you know, horror tropes. But it's a smart and efficient update that pays homage to the old and it freshens it up totally. Nothing really new, but what it does well. Did we need it again, like Pitch Perfect? No. But is it enjoyable? Hell yes. And I think it will get bums in seats.
Joe, you love the original Portuguese. Do you
want to finish? Yeah, I mean, I can't actually talk about this movie without going back to revisit the original. And I mean, I think the 1982 classic is just that in my mind. It was one of the scariest experiences I had watching a film as a child. I mean, you know, I did see this, you know, probably just, you know, in my early double digit years. I mean, I was really quite young when I saw it, and for its time, it was genuinely frightening. I mean, had an interesting release over here in the US in that it was released as a PG. Mm-hmm. And they originally got an R rating for it, but then they grumbled to the rating agency, who came back and said, no, all right, we can give it a PG.
Without any cuts?
Yeah, they got away. I think it was a PG or a PG-13, but it was definitely, I don't think they had PG-13 then. But it was a genuinely frightening movie. But one of the things that I really enjoyed about rewatching it with you, Rashmi, a couple of weeks ago was some of the social commentary that was going on there about, you know, when you say zeitgeist, Yasti, I mean, absolutely. Television, you know, the kind of the suburban neighborhoods that were springing up in the 80s, wood panel station wagons, the parental generation that was coming out of the 60s and their, you know, their kind of light drug use and some of that kind of, so, and the whole fact that this community was built upon, you know, there was that whole kind of, you know, very capitalist era here in the United States where corners were being cut for the sake of making money. And that's one of the key plot elements of Poltergeist, is that this housing estate is built on a cemetery. They didn't move the cemetery. They moved the headstones, but not the bodies. Fast forward to this version, and they retread a lot of the old ground. I mean, it's been updated culturally, so, you know, I think there's some commentary today based on, you know, a downturn in the economy. You know, people aren't doing so well. This isn't an affluent middle class family anymore. It was, you know, they're trying to kind of update that. There's mobile phones in the world, and the movie opens with this kind of zombie video game player, which, you know, gives you a kind of sense of the aesthetic that they're going to follow here. Ultimately, though, this was a very disappointing remake for me because the original is so beloved. They use many of the same lines of dialogue that are there in the original. So it speaks to the fans, right? There's there's so many ideas, and this the whole idea of a portal within a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time we get to go into the portal. Oh. And in the original movie, it was just, you know, they pulled a rope through it, right? There was a rope at one end and a rope at the other end. And we don't know what was happening in that closet and what, you know, what was going on between. Here, when they kind of show you, it was a little bit of a disappointment. It was less frightening to me. I mean, I think what I really believed in the original movie and I forget the name of the little lady that played the psychic in that film, but she was genuinely frightening because she brought up biblical themes. You know, the idea of the beast, and this movie didn't bother with doing any of that. And some of the fun scenes where things get moving, you know, move around the house and the family's kind of exploring, wow, look, this is cool. This ghost stuff is happening. And then they realize it's more ominous. They didn't do that. They just went straight for the boo gotchas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just the way that modern horror movies are designed, right? Modern audiences, you know, they want to have those jump scares. This one did that a little bit more than I would have hoped, and yeah, as such, it was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, see, Joe, I think it's hard to compete. It's hard for a remake of a movie to compete with the memory of how you felt when you watch a movie when you're so young and it has such an impact on you. So I think it's like guava juice, Joe. That's really based on a story where my dad many years ago came to the US and he drank some guava juice. And for the years after, he kept trying to look for the guava juice that he thought was so wonderful. And it actually ended up being the guava juice we'd first given him. It was the memory of it was much better than the actual juice.
I can totally see it.
Except for the fact that I drank the guava juice about 2 weeks or 3 weeks prior. I had another taste of it. And admittedly, although sure. Poltergeist has aged and the visual effects are clearly of their era, it was still a wonderfully scripted movie. I mean, there are so many beautiful moments in that original film in terms of how well it's written, lines of dialogue that they recycled here. And I think it was, for me, it was more the recycling of some of the ideas and not doing them as well. I mean, if you're going to do what they did before, then pay justice to it. Don't just use it as a throwaway line when it's clearly a very memorable line for fans of the original.
Sure, but what I was going to say was, for me, having watched the original in such a short period, I think this movie did it better because it really made more about Griffin, who's the middle child. He's the son in the movie. It actually gave Griffin an arc, and it felt like this was actually Griffin's movie. And I had something to hold on to. And I think I said to you, Joe, after we watched the original, had we been reviewing this, I would have said the story didn't quite make sense. So I think that this movie actually did it a little bit better in terms of the arc and the story that it gave us. And Sam Rockwell and Rosemary DeWitt are always a pleasure to watch. They played the parents so well. To me, it's always a testament of how effective a scary movie is by the level of nervous laughter in the theater. And I did feel like there was enough nervous laughter going on in the movie theater to make it feel like the audience were having a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you know me, I preach for a long time. I think, you know, Sam Rockwell, Marissa Tomei, Rosemary DeWitt, they are probably the most underrated actors right now. And, you know, they're incapable of turning in a bad performance. So I think you do good if you convince those actors to be in your movies to begin with. And for me, that also is a measure of a good scary movie, is if people are giggling, not because something is inherently funny, but they're giggling because they're scared. So, but you know, I'm scared easily, so I giggle a lot.
Me too. Yeah, I'm scared easily too. And Joe, I actually like the portrayal of going through that portal because for, you know, I read a lot of stuff about this soul stuff. I like that it showed that there was this parallel universe that was unreachable in some ways. The CG was quite clever in that way.
See, that's where my imagination is far superior to what they did here in terms of when we rewatch the original. The whole idea, I know you're quite into this, you know, afterlife soul stuff, and I'm like, ha, humbug. But the original movie, you know, is it's really a very compelling case for me in terms of these souls and their restlessness and their inability to transition to another level, which is one of the more frightening things about the movie, you know, that there is the possibility of becoming stuck between things. This movie didn't do that, you know. And, well, I guess it didn't in the sense of it depicted what was in there, which was very much like the zombie video game aesthetic that the movie started out with, right? You've got this portal, and it looks very CG synthetic in a way that modern movies do, whereas in the original movie, it was far more mystical. The souls were depicted as these orbs that kind of floated around. They floated down the stairs. We didn't know what they were. You could imagine that there were these beings or souls that were stuck somewhere in between things, and they didn't know what they were or what they were doing. So, I don't know. The fact that they decided to show it, you know, it's like the classic monster movie where the scariest monster is the one you never see. Mm-hmm. And here, when you get to see them, they look like, you know, sad old
people.
Yeah, dead corpses that are lying around the house.
What do you want them to look like?
That's the point. Your imagination makes them.
I know, but they weren't going to be Victoria's Secret models.
Well, right? So this movie, surprisingly, also has a PG rating. But what you're telling me makes me feel it's a lot more scarier than just a PG.
Yeah, see, it's not scary. It's got, you know, like I said at the beginning, it's got every horror trope, and it does go for the cheap, you know, gotcha moments, like Joe was saying. It's not scary, but it's effective.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe we should sum this one up. Yes, then. So, correct. Joe, you go first.
Yeah. If you assess it on its own merits, then I guess the movie does a reasonably competent job of telling the haunted house story. But if, like me, you were hoping to relive the trip that you took in the 1982 original, it really does come across as a disappointment. I'm going to give it a very fair 6 out of 10 for this. I mean, I didn't hate the movie. I just felt like it was a missed opportunity. And I think the missed opportunity was not in the direction or the performances or the handling. It was in the writing. I think they took some wonderful moments and really blew them. You know, the garage scene at the beginning of the movie, which relives something that happened at the very end of the first movie, is just a case of getting too excited. You know, they just jumped the gun and decided to go for the all-out horror movie thing, and yeah, just a real disappointment for me in that regard.
Okay, I mean, at the end of the day, this offers nothing new, and there's no reason to raise it from the dead other than you have a plethora of CGI effects available at your disposal in 2015. Despite that, I had a good time watching it. But Joe, I agree with your score, 6 out of 10.
I did like the quirky use of the guy from Mad Men.
Yes.
As the psychic. So, what's his name? Jared.
Not Leto.
Jared he's like Harris.
The son of some. Yes, he's the son of some English thespian.
Oh, Richard Harris. Maybe he's Richard Harris's son.
Yes, that's right.
Oh. Yeah, he had a fun role here as the quirky psychic. So.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Mel, move
on. So, yes, luckily you don't have to watch it.
No, I'll watch it if somebody else is. I won't watch it alone at home for sure.
Yeah, I'm just looking at its Rotten Tomatoes score. It's 32%, so people thought less of it than we did, Rashmi, which is always a disappointment.
Mel, it wasn't awful. I liked it.
Right. Well, let us know what you think. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, and facebook.com/movierollers as well. Until our next episode, too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.